Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Along the beautiful Trinity River in Willow Creek, California.
Absolutely gorgeous day, and I'm talking with Yaddo. We're going to talk a little bit about one of my favorite traditional foods, and that is lamprey eel. Yaddo, tell me a little bit about your background growing up. Did you grow up eating eel?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I grew up living downriver, so we ate pretty much all the traditional foods, so yeah.
Smoked and dried in all the different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We eat them fresh. We eat them dried, which is smoked, and then you eat them half dried.
But, just leave them out in the sun?
It's all smoked.
It's all smoked. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
You could do it the other way, but nobody does.
Oh, okay.
That I've ever heard. And you dry them about halfway, and then you put them in the oven now, but you would just put them by the coals back in the day.
What other traditional foods did you eat growing up, other than eel?
Lots of salmon, steelhead, deer meat, quail, grouse, squirrels, rabbits, acorns, lots of different kind of berries.
Who taught you about how you gather these foods and how you prepare them?
Oh, just different members of my family, you know, from my grandma, my uncles, my mom, aunties, older cousins, dad, you know, just the community, you know.
Were there roles that different genders took on? Like, did the women do a lot of the cooking, or did the men do the cooking too, or was it kind of split?
Well, it's split. Different foods and stuff have different practices commonly associated with them. In times of survival, all that goes out the window and you do what you need to do. But for whatever reason, when it comes to cooking fish nowadays, that tends to be a man's thing, just like men do a lot of barbecuing. I've never particularly heard that nobody else could, but that's just kind of the way
that's
that
what
goes.
Happens in my family. The man does the barbecuing. Yeah. I do the indoor cooking and the man does the outdoor cooking.
Yes. However that happened.
When did you first actually go and fish for eel and then learn how to clean and prepare them?
A little bit when I was really young, you know, helping my uncles and cousins with basket, probably, I don't know, 7 maybe, something like that. You know, you just kind of, you remember little things here and there, but I didn't get a lot more into it till later on.
Yeah, it seems like you kind of get eased into it, because I can remember as a kid, you know, when your parents are canning, then you have to take the peaches and you have your job, and it's like a really small part of the whole process, but you have your thing that you do, and it kind of eases you into knowing that this is going to be part of your life.
Yeah. Oh yeah, because eels are so slippery, it's hard for a little kid, you know, they're not all that skilled with knives and such yet, generally speaking, to hold on to an eel and not run it through their hand while they're trying to, you know, clean it.
So it sounds like you went out with the men to do the eel harvest. Did you do that with traps or did you do that with the hook?
Both. In our culture, men do the eeling. Families can go, but the actual job of getting eels is what men do. And then once you actually have them up on shore, then it's all hands on deck sort of thing. But yeah, we hook out of Coon Creek, out of the falls, and there's other places where we hook out of, and then with baskets, with our traps.
Can you describe that to me, the hooking part?
Well, eels, they love to hold onto rocks. And so when they're coming up through fast water, they'll be coming along the rocks. And they'll stop, and they'll go from one rock to another rock to another rock to another rock, sucking with their mouth. And so because we know this, in really fast water, they tend to get pushed into certain areas, and then you can literally scrape them off the rocks with a hook. In that place, it's a hook on a long pole. It used to be a single hook. Now, because of the way things are, we attach treble hooks to a long pole, but it's still the exact same technology and techniques.
And how did the traps work?
The traps, they're baskets. Let's say you have a basket, and it's like maybe, say, 30 inches long. And there'll be a funnel, just like it looks like a minnow trap or something on the other side. So when you hang that in the current, it creates an eddy, just like anything else would. And because of that eddy, again, those eels moving upstream, they're looking for a place to rest. And so they'll go in there to rest, and then they can't find their way back out.
Oh, okay. Because
the funnel is kind of small. So once you get in there, you turn around, come back out, you can't find the door again. And so then they're just kind of in there. And I mean, if you left them in there, eventually they'd figure it out.
Hopefully.
But you're supposed to check it, you know.
And who makes the baskets for trapping eels?
all the stuff associated with getting eels pretty much is managed up.
Okay. And then once they're all caught and they're up on the bank, then you said it kind of opens up and it's a kind of a free-for-all. Everybody's got to step up and do part of the job to get them prepared. Who kind of steps up to clean them?
Well, you know, that kind of can depend on, you know, who's there, of course. One of the places we go is a long, steep, downhill, I guess you could call it, it's a goat trail. And, you know, so I've been fortunate enough to go out with my uncles, cousins, and auntie. And so then, you know, it's whoever's there, you know, can help out later on and help clean them out. But again, for whatever reason, it tends to end up being men and boys who are doing all the cleaning. And it's, you know, I guess, you know, it's fair.
So it's icky jobs.
Well, it's fair. And then, you know, yeah, if you're asking somebody to cook for you, you
yeah,
know,
you bring I like them in that. Clean, yeah.
You know, but again, each family has their own traditions. Uh-huh. You know, different families do it different ways.
Once you have an eel, how do you prepare it at that point? They're not a pretty animal, I have to say. They're not really attractive. And when the first time I saw a video of Megan Baldy cleaning an eel, I was like, powerful woman. Because it's kind of a scary operation. But how do you do that?
Well, yeah, they're a lot like every other fish in that there's, you know, there's a vent and there's a place to put the knife, and then you just run it up to the throat. And then you, you know, take all the guts out. And then, but the thing that's different with them is they don't have the traditional gills like a salmon or something where it's just, you know, one yank and it's out. They have more like lungs, you know. It's all these little individual pockets you're going to clean out, you know. And so, like, there's kind of a joke that if you get too many eels, then the last so many will not have no heads. And that's because cleaning out all those little, you know, all the little lung gill filament, whatever exactly they are, they're more like lungs and gills. Uh-huh. And but there's like a number of little pockets of them, so you got to clean them out. Uh-huh. And if you get, you know, 100 of them, you get tired of doing that.
Oh, I get it. Okay. That it does seem like a really labor intensive process to prepare eel.
Not really. I mean, you can clean one out and throw it on the coals and eat it in no time.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the little teeth on it, they are really kind of wild because mm-hmm. it's like a circle of teeth. But are they really hard teeth? Are they like really sharp? Could you cut yourself on those teeth?
No, not really.
Okay.
I mean, and our eels don't really have a circle of teeth. They have a couple coming in from each side,
oh,
opposing
okay.
sides. There are different lamprey that have, you know, many, many teeth. So, no, they're not like, you know, piranha teeth or nothing like that.
Okay.
You know.
And when you catch them, then if you're going to smoke them and you're on the river, do you just like bring an ice chest along and then you just throw them in the ice chest and then they're good to go till you get to the smoker?
This depends on how far away, you know, from where you're going home is. You know, a lot of people, when they're eeling on the coast, will, you know, have a cooler and throw them in, but it's not totally necessary because it's primarily a cold weather activity.
So you're doing it in the wintertime?
Well, yeah, in the winter through spring. It's not that eels aren't running right now, it's that we don't eat them right now because they get bad. Temperatures
high.
Parasites. Like, you could eat them, but you wouldn't really want to.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that was a cold weather activity. So
yeah. Primarily, back in the day, November was a big time eel month, one of the biggest. But now they tend to not be running real heavy till a little bit later, you know, January, February. And then up in the river, we'll start scratching rocks up there, you know, more like, sometimes we'll go early, but you might not expect them to come in really heavy till like, you know, February, March, and be done sometime late April.
Well, there's so much to learn about lamprey eels, and it's such a fascinating topic. I'd love to come back next week, and we can talk a little bit more about lamprey eels. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Yaddo along the river. Thank you so much, Yaddo.
Thank you.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.